which nutritional supplements, herbs, minerals, probiotics, enzymes, vitamins should we use or not use? I would say that I don't know what it was like 10 years ago, but at this point, most medical, not most, but medical doctors that I've gone to are also have a line of supplements they recommend. There's a lot of different types of nutritional testing you can do for hair, blood, urine, stool tests, and they give you a profile and say you're deficient in molybdenum, you're deficient in calcium. There's, you know, really, there's just a lot of information and a lot of encouragement to balance out your deficiencies. And many, many health people are recommending to balance out, get your vitamin D, get some vitamin A, get some vitamin C. What are your recommendations on nutritional supplementation, whether we're talking about medicinal mushrooms, herbs, vitamins, minerals, etc.?
You guys mind if I start off? Because
Yeah, go ahead, please.
you used a trigger word for me, Stephen, and that is vitamin D. It's not a vitamin. It is a hormone. It is a hormone that every human being can and would make if we were running around butt naked in the sun as nature intended. And the only reason it is a problem in industrialized societies is because we all have on clothes and we spend most of our time either in a building or in a car. And so we don't get the level of sun exposure that we need. And the reason it's even called a vitamin is because, you know, nearly 100 years ago, the dairy industry had the bright idea, if we add this stuff to our products and call it vitamin D, it'll make people want to buy dairy products. Again, any D3 that's in a dairy product is added. You don't need the dairy product to get to D3. You can get it separately. And so, in terms of the supplements that I think people absolutely should take, really, there's only, I mean, the only two I think is essential for people on plant-based diets to take consistently are D3, because not because there's a problem with the diet, but there's a problem with the way we live. And then B12. And again, it's because B12 is made by bacteria. But in modern societies, we've eliminated natural sources of B12 from the food we eat, the water we drink. And so we have to add it back. Now, there are a number of things over and above that that people can take. And there's a million, as you said, there are a million different groups and people out there who are always trying to sell you something. And what about this? What about that? People ask me, hey, what about CMOS? I heard CMOS is great. And I want to go back to what you said about me at the beginning. If it doesn't make sense, it's probably not right. And while there, you know, CMOS comes from this plant that is in the ocean. Well, human beings are theorized to have developed in the African interior. We didn't have access to CMOS, but we became a very successful species. So CMOS is not necessary. That doesn't mean CMOS is not healthy or that it can't be helpful or beneficial, but it's not something people should feel like, oh, I am going to die if I'm not taking a CMOS supplement. Because, you know, we didn't develop that way. We don't, it's an added benefit. The other thing I always keep in mind is that if you take a cultivated vegetable that we eat commonly, potatoes, carrots, you name it, and compare it to its wild counterparts, number one, the wild versions are going to look very different. For instance, the potatoes are a lot skinnier. They have a lot more fiber in them. I mean, even our food, we've bred to be obese. But they also have a higher density of nutrients because a plant is a living organism. Every 24 hours, it can create X amount of energy, and it has to use that energy to do, make macronutrients, to grow in size, to, you know, do make phytochemicals and antioxidants. Well, if it's using proportionally more energy to become big, because Westerners like big vegetables, then it has less energy to put into manufacturing those wonderful phytochemicals and macronutrients. So I'm saying all that to say that if a person on a plant-based diet feels that they want to supplement with a multivitamin or some vitamin, vitamin C or something like that, I think that's fine. That can turbocharge your diet, but I don't think it's something that people should feel that they have to do. And then last point, probiotics versus prebiotics. Again, everybody will, if you look at TV, if you listen to the nonsense that's on the internet, you will come away with the conclusion that if you're not taking a probiotic, you're going to drop dead like in a couple of hours. Again, not doesn't make sense. Human beings didn't develop popping probiotic pills. And actually the studies on probiotics show that you take the probiotic, the bacteria lasts for maybe a couple of days, and then they're eventually pushed out with the poop. What's more important are prebiotics, the things that bacteria feed on. And if you have a diet that is filled with whole plant food, healthy fibers, and again, the greater the variety, the better, that's when you build up that healthy microbiome that stays put and doesn't get pushed out unless you take some antibiotics or something. So again, the plant foods are better for helping you to have a good, healthy microbiome than any probiotic supplement that you can take.
Thank you. So I guess the punchline question of all is...
Well, Steve, I don't think that Brenda and Juliana got to comment on that question you asked. And I really want to hear their perspective as RDs.
Go ahead, Jill.
Sorry. Thank you.
Well, there was a recent study that came out. I think vitamin D is losing its day in the sun. You know how we used to have these vitamin du jour? It was like A, and then it was E, and then we had the carrot studies, and then all of a sudden we saw that like concentrating and isolating nutrients became more risky. There was a recent study that the Preventive Task Force put out that a vitamin D supplementation is not, they're not, our testing for vitamin D is not going to be recommended anymore because there's no direct associations between improvements in health. But that was, I just thought that was really interesting, but that's just a side note. I just think that these things kind of come and go and the information kind of evolves. It's really interesting. I highly, highly am passionate about recommending vitamin B12 to anyone on a plant-based diet, anyone over the age of 50, as per the Institute of Medicine. The reason we're seeing high levels of deficiency in vegans are because this thinking of, oh, it's a great healthy diet, it's natural, we don't need B12. And I've seen it happen where deficiency is not only possible, but the potential risk for irreversible neurological impacts is just not worth it. It's a cheap, effective, safe, you know, it's water soluble, it's the easiest thing to do. So I'm very passionate about recommending vitamin B12. For vitamin D, I do recommend D2 because of our unnatural lifestyles too, but I like to, because it's fat soluble, I have my clients test their blood first when possible. This is going to make this more difficult now with this new study, I think, because I want to know what their blood level is before I make a recommendation. But the generally speaking, 2000 IU a day is what a lot of people recommend, pretty much safe, even if it's, you know, even if you have a normal level. So vitamin B12, D, I'm still recommending, I'm on the fence about K2 and iodine and zinc. So iodine is a concern because a lot of people are limiting their salts because of, you know, for hypertension, so many people with blood pressure issues, salt sensitivity. And the other thing we're noticing a lot lately is I've seen a lot of goiters for the first time in my career in the last few years. And I think it's because a lot of people are eating the fancy salts, the Himalayan pink salt and the this salt and the that salt, and they're not iodized. So people need to be aware of iodine. Adults need 150 micrograms a day. And then zinc we can get from plants, you know, beans and legumes and leafy greens, but because of the inhibitors, it's a little bit more challenging. So just people need to be aware of zinc. And I still am recommending, not like, it's not like you must do this, or it's like, it's the essential fats, the EPA and DHA, the longer chain. I'm so curious what you're thinking on this now, Brenda, is, but I do have my clients supplement with a microalgae EPA and DHA formula. I don't have them do it every single day, and I'm kind of back and forth on it because the formulas are so different and varied, but I do want to make sure people are either getting more ALA, so that the flax, that's another reason flaxseed, chia seed, hemp seeds are so important, walnuts, that kind of thing. You could either double your dose of that or consider taking an EPA and DHA microalgae formula.
That's great. I'm pretty much on the same page. I definitely B12. When we ignore B12, homocysteine shoots up. Your risk of having a child with birth defects. If you're a pregnant woman and you are not getting B12, your child could develop irreversible brain damage in fairly short order. Every time that happens, it's a tragedy that is completely avoidable. And it sets us back. It hits the headlines and the whole plant-based movement gets set back. So to me, this is not really even debatable. We need a source of B12. And what most of us recommend is 1,000 micrograms twice a week. And just take care of it. Just do that. And then, of course, the other nutrients, vitamin D. I mean, all infants should be taking a vitamin D supplement. And then most children need a vitamin D supplement. Most adults need a vitamin D supplement. I'm always amazed at friends that actually live in reasonably sunny areas who have their vitamin D levels tested. And they are so vitamin D deficient. It's ridiculous. And so most of us, I know my co-author, Vasanta Molina, she is trying to get her vitamin D up to within the healthy range. And she's now at 6,000 IUs a day trying to do that, because at 4,000, it wasn't working. And so she's just been experimenting and talking to a lot of the experts, but really trying to get it to a level that's healthy. Mine's always been in a reasonable range, and I just take 1,000 IUs a day. But most people probably need closer to 2,000 if they aren't exposed to adequate sunshine. And of course, I live in Canada. Nobody's exposed to adequate sunshine from, about October to April or May. So it's just we don't. And I love what you said, Milton. I mean, we are, as human beings, originated near the equator in Africa. And as we moved further north, our skin started to get whiter so we could get more vitamin D. The color of our skin has so much to do with protection from the sun. And that's, I think that's just the reality. And so for people who have darker skin, who live in Canada, for example, they need to be especially conscious about vitamin D. And then, Juliana, you also mentioned iodine. And again, different places in the world, the soil has different iodine content. And if you're vegan, what are the sources of iodine? Seaweed is a very concentrated source. And iodized salt, which we iodize salt to, because, the number one cause of cognitive impairment worldwide is iodine deficiency. If a pregnant woman is iodine deficient, or an infant is even marginally iodine deficient, it can mean a loss of 10 to 15 IQ points. So we need to make sure we've got a source. And all of these people, as you said, Juliana, pink Himalayan sea salt and all of these sea salts that aren't sources of iodine, they may not be getting enough iodine, because the other sources are fish and eggs and milk, because we use iodine to clean the teats of, so it's all of these animal products. If you're not consuming animal products and you're not a seaweed person and you don't consume iodized salt, you could be in trouble. You need to make sure there's a source. So you could do a multivitamin with iodine, you could do iodine drop, or you could add some seaweed to your diet if you don't want to use much salt. And seaweed, you need to be aware of too. If you're eating nori, nori isn't a super concentrated source. So you might get 100 micrograms in one nori sheet, or 50 to 100, somewhere in that range. As Juliana said, we need 150 micrograms a day, and it's 220 if you're pregnant, it's 290 if you're lactating. But it's 110 to 130 if you're an infant. So that's a lot. It's about 90 for a small child. If you're doing nori, that's a reasonable source. But if you're doing kelp powder provides 150 micrograms in a 16th of a teaspoon. If you do an eighth of a teaspoon and you're a toddler, you exceed your upper limit. So you need to be aware, if you're using seaweeds, that the amounts are in certain seaweeds, especially kelp, but even dulse and wakami and arami and all of these other seaweeds are reasonably concentrated. And so as little as a teaspoon can, you know, be above the upper limit for some people. And so we just need to be aware of that. And if you're using kelp powder, it's just a tiny sprinkle is all you need. But yes, I think that's another one we need to be aware of. And then EPA and DHA, I think, are still worth considering, because they are so important to the permeability and flexibility and you know, the structure of our cell membranes. They're important to the gray matter of our brains. These are really important biologically active omega-3s. They get converted into all sorts of you know, eicosanoids, prostaglandins, prostacyclins, leukotrienes. They get converted into resolvins and protectins that are very anti-inflammatory. These are really important compounds. And so naturally, we humans would have an ability to convert the plant omega-3, which is alpha-linolenic acid, into these longer chain fatty acids, the more biologically active fatty acids. And that conversion is probably the most the best for young women, women of childbearing age, because we have to produce a baby and they need to grow a brain and all of that. Men don't seem to be quite as efficient at converting, but we also have to remember these are the most unsaturated fats in the diet. And so they, you know, you don't want a whole lot floating around in your blood. You want them to be used for what they need to be used for. And so there are some studies, you know, very high levels of fish oil, which are high in omega, you know, EPA and DHA, may have some adverse effects with in terms of oxidative stress and such. But generally, if you're looking, and I think this is important to recognize, that these fatty acids are actually made by tiny plants in the ocean called microalgae. And if the fish are high in EPA and DHA, it's because at some point along the food chain, they ate little fish that ate those little plants. And so what we're doing as vegans is we're culturing the plants, growing them, extracting the EPA and DHA, and we don't have to rape the oceans to do that. So you can culture them without mercury, without cadmium, without, you know, the contaminants that are in the ocean, because of course fish is only as clean as the water it's swimming in, and that's not very clean. So it's just something to consider. So adding EPA and DHA is probably important for people that can't convert very well, and for pregnant and lactating women, you want to get your numbers up a bit. But the people that don't convert very well are people with hypertension, people with diabetes, people with some of these conditions that have lower enzymes, delta 6 desaturase enzymes, so they're not converting as well. And so do some people who come from cultures that traditionally ate a lot of seafood. And so their bodies wouldn't naturally produce quite as much of these desaturase enzymes, and they may be better off taking in a direct source. Generally, I don't see a big downside to taking in, but you know, most of the supplements that are microalgae based are 200 or 300 milligrams a day of EPA and DHA. And to me, it's a reasonable amount, and it's a bit of an insurance that, you know, that you're getting enough, because generally we see vegetarians having about a third less lower levels of EPA, DHA in breast milk and in blood and so forth, and vegans having probably half the levels that omnivores do. And so to me, getting a little bit of EPA and DHA may be a very reasonable thing.
I want to jump in, Steve, because there's something important I want to add. I want to go, I want to say a little bit about DHA, EPA as well, but I want to stress the importance of the D3. And, you know, every now and then we'll get a study that comes out that will call some sort of established idea or principle in plant-based the plant-based world into question. And, you know, Juliana, you were mentioning this current study that raises some questions about D3. That's kind of off the track of everything else we've seen. I mean, because all of it, as a clinician, I know that D3 is important in helping to prevent falls in elderly people. It is important for, it actually has been shown to reduce cancer risk, heart disease. But what's been especially made clear recently was its impact on COVID susceptibility and COVID, the course of COVID disease. And the research has consistently shown the people who get the sickest and have the highest risk of dying are people with suboptimal D3 levels. So, and the reason is because every immune cell that circulates in our body has a D3 receptor. And if it's not occupied with that D3 molecule, it's not going to work as well. So I want to stress that we've all got to make sure that we're D3 replete. And the question is, well, how much do you recommend? I recommend 5,000 IUs a day. Now you say, whoa, that sounds like a lot. It's really not that much. But there's a study that was done on it may be the San or the Bantu tribes in Southern Africa, who essentially run around all day wearing a long loincloth in the sun. And those people make 15 to 20,000 IUs through natural sun exposure. So a 5,000 IU supplement is not going to put anybody in a danger zone. And I think it is really closer to what our body needs on a daily basis. And then the last thing with respect to the longer chain EPA, DHA, I agree with both Juliana and Brenda that there's benefit to taking a supplement. And again, this goes back to the foods that, and this even concerns the iodine question, because even the plant foods that we eat are cultivated, meaning that they are grown on soil that is being utilized, continuously, aggressively, and is frequently fertilized with artificial fertilizers. And if there isn't a source of iodine in that fertilizer, the plant's not going to be able to take it up and get it into its tissues. So again, I think that part of the reason that it's somewhat more difficult to get our iodine from a lot of the plant foods we eat is because we're eating cultivated foods. And that cultivated food is grown on iodine depleted soil. And so as they both pointed out, it is really important to make sure that we are getting that iodine supplement. And then lastly, a lot of wild green vegetables, green leafy vegetables in particular, actually manufacture long chain EPA DHA like purslane. But these are things that are not commonly eaten by human beings. And again, thinking back to that fossilized coprolite, fossilized human feces from Paleolithic era times, it was clear that human beings were eating huge amounts of green leafy plants. And I strongly suspect that they were getting those natural sources of EPA, DHA that we don't get now. And that's why it's helpful to supplement.
Okay. So let me clarify this a little. So if soon that someone is saying, I don't want to get into trouble, I don't want dementia, I don't want to find out that I did it wrong. I heard you say that everyone needs B12. I heard you say that we need iodine. We need vitamin D3. And we probably need EPA, DHA. And I'm not sure if you said to get it from algae oil or if you were saying to get it from fish oil.
Oh, no.
So, for all of you, this question is. So the question is, did you say that iodine, B12, D3, and EPA, DHA for whole food plant-based eaters are things we've got to make sure we're supplementing with? And is the EPA, DHA from algae oil or fish? And was there anything else you said that we got to make sure we take to not get into trouble? I'm not sure if is that what you said, but tell me if what I'm saying is accurate or you change that.
All right, I'll go first and then leave it to the experts. D3 supplement essential. Again, artifact of how we live. we're clothed and indoors most of the time, so we need to do that D3 supplement. B12, again, essential for people on a plant-based diet because the animal sources and the bacterial sources have been eliminated from our daily ingestion. So again, this is an artifact of how we're living, of the way we live in modern society. It is nothing wrong or defective with the diet. And I generally tell people to take a multivitamin once or twice a week, which will have iodine, a multivitamin with minerals, excuse me, so that they can make sure they're getting source of iodine and zinc, although it can be equally helpful to just take a separate iodine supplement. I think if you really have a very balanced, healthy plant-based diet where you're taking in your plant-based sources of omega-3 fatty acids, you're limiting your total fat intake so that you're not saturating that delta-6 desaturase enzyme, that you're probably going to be okay. Although it is also super easy to take, get a plant algae-based source of EPA, DHA and take it, you know, two or three times a week. If I were counseling a pregnant woman or a woman who's thinking of getting pregnant, I would tell her, definitely, I want you to take the DHA EPA supplement just to be super safe. But for other people, it's your judgment call. It can be helpful. I don't think again, a capsule two or three times a week, that there's any danger to that. So that's my opinion.
And I just want to add with the D3, I think it's important to note that it's not just plant-based people that need to worry about D3.
Oh, absolutely.
Everybody.
Thank you. Yes.
Everybody.
Everybody is low.
And so it's,
yes,
it's not something that's just unique to people eating a plant-based diet. And then the iodine, I think the thing to remember about the iodine is it is possible to get plenty if you are a consumer, a regular consumer of seaweed or iodized salt. But those people that don't consume those things definitely need a source of iodine. And then with what were the other things? B12, well, that's a non-issue. And the other thing I want to say about vitamin D3 is that we have vitamin D2 that a lot of people think vitamin D2 is the plant-based form and D3 is the animal-based form. And there are plenty of plant-based D3s available. So that's important to note as well. And then in terms of EPA, DHA, I don't think any of us would ever recommend fish oil. To get fish oil, you need to catch fish. And to catch fish, you literally, we're talking about raping the oceans. It's estimated that by 2048, all of the fish stocks in the ocean will be pretty much fished out. It makes no sense to be getting EPA and DHA for fish when where it comes from is microalgae. Why don't we grow the microalgae? We don't have to rape the oceans. It's clean. It's just a way, way preferable source of EPA and DHA. Juliana, anything more to add?
Agreed.